ID, the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Welcome. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes. Today we get to talk again with Cornelius Hunter. We initiated a conversation about determinism and free will, relating it to the history of science, all the way going back to Aristotle up to the present, visited the French physicist Laplace, who thought he had worked out a deterministic universe, but it turns out it's much more complicated than that. And so, Dr. Hunter, thanks for joining us for a second part of this series.
Good to be back, Mike. Thank you.
So you had brought us up to comparing some of the gaping assumptions that haven't been examined well in the determinism argument that are reminiscent of the ones in neo-Darwinism. And you mentioned that there was another angle on this that would provide further insight into this debate. So why don't you go there, Cornelius?
Yes, very good. So we looked at the historical backdrop with Aristotle, Newton, and Laplace. And we looked at the question of adequacy, the scientific adequacy of Laplace's claim and that similar claim of today's determinists, those hard over determinists who say the entire history of the universe is determined by deterministic laws of science. Is that really adequate? And then we looked at this irrational treatment of evidence. Now, next, let's just take the position of the hard over determinist and do a little reductio analysis. Let's say that, okay, they're right. There are these deterministic laws of nature. They govern the entire history of the universe. There is no free will. So not only is nature governed by these laws, but humans are as well. The human brain is simply no different than any other collection of molecules governed by the laws of gravity, classical physics, electrostatics, thermodynamics, and what have you. And so everything we do, everything we think, everything we feel is simply an interaction of molecules in our head. But beyond that, it's all preordained in the sense of the initial conditions at the Big Bang, and then the deterministic natural laws of science after that determined all of this. Everything that happened could have been, in principle, could have been predicted from the Big Bang if you had a good enough computer to do that. So what does that mean? What does that imply? Well, okay, let's look at the works of Beethoven. Let's look at the works of Shakespeare. And you know, obviously, we can go on and on with this. It just becomes laughable that the laws of physics, the laws of nature, and those initial conditions 13 whatever billion years ago somehow came up with everything we have in the world today. The discussion I'm having with you right now was all in the cards, so to speak. It was all going to happen. This is just clearly ludicrous. It's absurd. In fact, there's even something worse going on with this angle, and that is, let me make a statement right now, and that is, free will is something that I have. I have free will. Okay, I just said that statement. Now, these determinists, such as Sabine Hassenfelder, would say, well, that's wrong. Okay, but I said it. And that means that something that was preordained, something that was in the cards forever, could be false.
Right. So even false views were preordained to occur, according to that account.
And so how do we distinguish between a false view and a true view?
Yeah, if they're all predetermined, right?
Yeah. What is truth? The whole question of epistemology is in question. It basically goes out the window. Things are just simply molecules in play according to natural laws. There is no truth value to anything. And so right. Why should we believe anything that Sabine Hassenfelder says?
Yeah, because epistemology has a lot to do with oughtness. You ought to think in certain reliable ways and avoid lazy ways of thinking. Whereas everything just is, there is no ought, right? There's no better thinking or worse thinking. It's just thinking happens, right?
Exactly. So they've muddled into these deep waters without really understanding what sort of danger they're in and creating a system that is cutting itself off at the knees. There's no guarantee of any truth. There's no guarantee of truth, period. Why should we believe what they are saying if what they are saying is true? The whole house of cards falls apart very quickly. And then finally, the last angle that I think is interesting is reminiscent of Hume's argument against miracles. He made this famous argument, which tickled the ear at the time in the middle of the 18th century. And his argument against miracles basically went like this. You have a lot of evidence for miracles. Yes, I admit that. The church was good about recording those and took that very seriously. Okay, good. But you also, on the other hand, have all this evidence for natural law. And there's a lot more evidence for natural law. And so I'll stack those up any day, and those are going to win. If we look at this as an evidence against evidence problem, the evidence for natural law is going to win out.
Okay, so Cornelius, you were role-playing David Hume there, right?
You're right.
Okay, all right, so David Hume resurrected. All right, so now you're going to critique what you just kind of imitated there.
Yeah, so that's David Hume talking, and it's highly problematic because, well, first of all, it's a false dichotomy. It isn't one or the other. Miracles actually require natural law. You have to have a uniform experience in order to be able to recognize them for a miracle to actually occur. Right. It occurs in a context. It's not one or the other. The whole idea is just his argument was built on a house of cards, but it tickled the ear at the time. There were critics back then, but they didn't succeed in holding the day. More recently, John Ehrman has really pretty much demolished Hume's argument, but it held sway for many years. But it's reminiscent of this argument now that somehow you've got, you know, these natural laws, and it's one or the other. Either you have natural laws and no free will, or there seems to be a lack of ability to hold both of these ideas together, that there could be natural laws and you could also have free will. It's like, well, I can predict a cannonball and how it flies through the air, therefore there's no free will. It is silly. It is just, the absurdity is difficult to really grasp in its full magnitude. And that's why I think it's so interesting about this issue of determinism. It shines a light on and reveals a thinking that most people will have trouble even grasping or believing. Are there people that really believe this way? And there are plenty. And that's what I think is so interesting about this. And its similarity to the arguments in evolution, whether evolution is an adequate account for the origin of species.
And Cornelius, I think it's interesting that whether it's Sabina Hosenfelder or other bright theoretical physicists or evolutionary biologists, they're well credentialed in their own fields, but often they are very backward in their thinking about the basic philosophical issues that are lurking behind all of these larger arguments that science itself can't really solve, determinism, free will. I mean, obviously you want to take into account what we learn from science to interact with different views about free will and determinism, but they just simplistically say, as David Hume did, that because we have all this evidence for natural law, therefore there can't be human agency or free will. But of course, natural laws really just tell us what happens normally when there isn't agency operating, right? And it doesn't say anything about the possibility of true choice or agency.
Yeah, exactly, Mike. And I'm glad you brought that point up about the fact that these people are well credentialed, as you put it. And you can go further and say they're very intelligent people. These people are no fools. These are smart people. You have to recognize and acknowledge their accomplishments and their stature. These are very smart people with appointments at leading institutions. They're smart people. And yet, you see this lack of wisdom, I guess is what I would call it, and these bizarre positions that they hold, and hold with great confidence. They're not willing to budge on this. They're not going to budge on this, at least not by the arguments that you and I might put forth.
Such is the human condition.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so what are some take-home lessons then for our listeners? I mean, you've already applied it in some way to the evolution debate, because if we're just a product of unguided material processes, then, you know, you could say my genes made me do it, or my whatever, you know, happened in the history of life up to this point made me do it. But no one really takes that seriously in a court of law, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think for a take-home, a couple of things to be skeptical of the expert. We live in an age of experts and technologists, and they don't necessarily know everything. And so right. To be skeptical, to apply common sense. And I hearken back to Hans Christian Andersen and his wonderful little story of the emperor's new clothes. When I first read it, I thought, well, this is kind of dumb, right? You know, the story is about an emperor who needs some new clothes, and some sly foxes come to town as tailors and say, yeah, we're going to give you some really, this is something very, very special. So a new kind of clothes is going to blow you away. And there are no clothes. They actually take his clothes off and they pretend to put clothes on him, but they don't. And he's naked and they are saying, oh, these clothes are beautiful.
And they're the experts, right?
They're the experts. The king doesn't want, the emperor doesn't want to be the dummy. He says, well, wait a minute, I don't have any clothes on. And all of the other people in the court follow suit. So, well, yes, those are beautiful clothes. And now they have a big parade in front of all the subjects of the kingdom. And everyone is, oh, this is beautiful. It takes a young child to cry out and say, the emperor has no clothes.
Right.
To say the obvious. And that's sometimes where we're at in these sorts of discussions that are impactful. These are not, we're not just arguing about how many angels are on the head of a pin or something, or whatever the metaphor is. These can be important views that affect our views of metaphysics and life and politics and public policy, and how we view God and creation affects all of the things that we hold dear in our regular daily walk.
Sure. Well, great. Thank you, Cornelius, for joining us in this interesting conversation about determinism and free will.
Thank you, Mike. A lot of fun.
And so we've learned a little bit more about the naked truth about deterministic claims, that they're not all what they seem to be and with all the authority that they're declared with. So thank you, listeners, for joining us for yet another episode of ID the Future. I am Mike Keyes. Join us another time.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.